sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, welcome to the broadcast. I'm still locked into the Life
Broadcast?
Talk.
Podcast.
Podcast. See, I'm still locked into that. I'm old. What do you expect? I mean, when you've heard something for 70 years, it's hard to get away from it in just a few months. But anyway.
Well, you know, podcast is not something that just popped up overnight. It's been here for a while.
A very short while. Not a long time.
It's been around a lot longer than you think.
Anyway, thanks guys for joining us again. And Sarah's got a bunch of stuff talking about Planned Parenthood. More dirt comes out on these people every day, and it's a testament to something you've heard me say for years if you've watched our broadcast on the old Life Talk show. There's no right way to do a wrong thing.
Yeah.
And Planned Parenthood can try to put a happy face on abortion and all the other garbage that they do and the pedophilia that they're involved in and the sexualization of young children. Some of the stuff they're teaching kids 5 and 6 years old. I can't believe parents are going for this.
Yeah.
But there's no right way to do a wrong thing. And more we're starting to see more and more of their evil, even from their own people, racism and other issues coming out.
Well, but abortion is inherently a limit of a product. And you can try and do all of the branding and putting a happy face on it that you want to, but that won't change it. And Planned Parenthood can try to call themselves champions for women, but every time it comes down to it, abortion will be chosen over women. They
every
are not
time.
Pro 100% women. They are
of the
pro
time.
Abortion.
Right.
That is their thing.
Every time. But before we get to that, I want to bring up something here just real quickly. Of course, most of you guys know that we were the group that first came out with the information about the harvesting of body parts from babies.
Or maybe you don't know.
Maybe you don't know.
But now you do.
Now you do.
And we came out with, was it 2000?
Yeah. And later on, David Dalyden repeated and basically confirmed everything that we had done. He did a really good job on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we were the first group that revealed this harvesting of body parts.
Much to the chagrin of the abortion industry.
Much to that. And I've always said there's lots of things that we know about that situation that we've never made public. Mm-hmm. And there's some reasons that we're doing that. We're still not totally through with that project. We've got some other things. So we don't want to reveal everything, but we will at some point. But things keep coming out, partially because of what David Dalyden did, the good information he gave out.
Mm-hmm. The more you just keep digging on this stuff, the more that you find.
The nastier it gets. The deeper you dig, the nastier it gets. Now some new documents have come out, 252 pages of documents about practices at the University of Pittsburgh, who's been harvesting organs to be used in medical experiments from aborted babies. Mm-hmm. And the federal government has been giving them at least $2.7 million in federal tax dollars over the last 5 years to become what they call a tissue hub. This is a place where the tissue funnels through to go out to researchers. And now it seems like these documents are showing that it's not uncommon for them to be in situations where babies are born alive during abortions, and they just let them die so that they can harvest their parts.
And that's not really surprising, especially some
new.
Of the parts that they want.
Right.
For example, tell people about cord blood.
Yeah, well, one of the products that they sell, and we had protocols from them back in the day when we first revealed this, was cord blood. Mm-hmm. Well, the baby has to come out of the mother intact in order to get the cord blood out of
it. Cord blood means basically you drain the blood from the unborn child.
You're draining all the blood out of them, and you use that in medical experiments. This is ghastly stuff, and I don't want to stay on this too much because you got a lot of stuff that you want to get to. But this goes back to that no right way to do a wrong thing.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I've always said, and I know you've heard me say it a million times, there is no force on earth more dangerous than science that's unfettered by morality. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're seeing right here.
Yeah.
Because what you're seeing is people who would tell you, well, I'm not a theologian, I'm a scientist, so therefore this is all okay. No, it's not okay. And when these people go down this trail, they're not scientists anymore.
Yeah.
They're savages. So you may have all the degrees in the world, and you may have all these letters after your name, and you may work at a prestigious university, and you may get money from the government. you're a savage. You're not a scientist anymore once you go down this trail. And it doesn't matter what good you think might come from it.
Mm-hmm.
You could cure cancer doing this stuff, and that doesn't make you any less a savage.
Joseph Mengele was a doctor, and he was given a title and position with the Nazi Party.
Yeah.
Didn't change what he did.
Yeah.
He was a barbarian.
Doctor of death.
He was an angel of death as well. It was his nickname.
Right. He was a savage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these people are.
And one day history will look back at this, and they will look at these people who are harvesting these parts and using them for science. They're going to look back at these people the same way that they do at Joseph Mengele.
Yeah. I've had even people that claim to be pro-life. They weren't, but they claim to be pro-life. Since we first revealed the baby parts thing, saying, well, I understand that you're outraged by this, but don't you think at least some good comes from abortion when you do this? And the baby shouldn't have been killed, I admit, should not have been killed, but at least something good came from the death. No, we should never profit from our own evil.
If you're going to use that kind of logic, you can justify anything.
Anything. That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
science could, without morality.
You could go down and rob an elderly person of all of their money. But be like, oh, but I went and spent it to fund cancer research and we found a cure.
Or I tithed to my church 10% of what I stole.
And we fixed our roof.
Right.
Are you going to really tell me that what you did there justified the wrong over here?
That's what these people think. And that, again, it's because they bought into this science separated from morality. And when you do that, this stuff right here is
make no mistake, this is a marketing line from the abortion industry because they want to be able to get as much profit out of all these abortions as they can. And selling aborted baby parts is more profit in their
pocket.
More money,
right. Yeah, that's right. And it makes them feel good about themselves. They think, oh, yeah, we're helping to cure cancer, or we're curing diabetes, or we're curing blindness, or whatever the protocol might be for the research. That makes absolutely no difference.
Well, and let's make an important distinction here. Just because these parts are used for research does not mean that anything actually comes out of it.
No, but even if it did, I don't care if they do these sort of things and they cure cancer tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I've had these people personalize it to me and say, are you telling me that if you had cancer or someone you loved had cancer or had diabetes or something and they were dying from it, that you would object to them being treated with something that came from unborn babies? And the answer is yes, I would. And I'll tell you, just on a personal level, I had a daughter that died from a condition called Meckel-Gruber syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fatal. There's no survival of it. They only live a few days. And she lived one day. It's the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. It's not natural to bury your own child. But if you tell me, if I could go back and cure Meckel-Gruber syndrome and her continue to live as my daughter, but the cost of doing that would have been aborting unborn babies and using their parts in the research to cure Meckel-Gruber, I'd say no. And if that makes me sound hard-hearted or cold-blooded or like I didn't love her or whatever, tough. I don't care what people think of me. But I don't want to see our nation go down this path where we say we can profit from our own evil. And I've had people who've told me, yes, I know abortion's evil, but at least something good's coming from it. We don't deserve to have something good coming from it. And I guarantee you, God doesn't look down and say, okay, you butchered, you know, a couple of hundred million of my babies, but that's okay because you cured cancer. God can cure cancer right now if he wants to. If it's that important to him to cure cancer, he can do it right now. He doesn't need us to butcher the babies that he creates in order to do it. But anyway, don't get me on my soapbox. Let's go back and talk about
it. I think that ship has already sailed. I think you're sliding down the hill on your soapbox already.
Right. That's okay.
So, yeah, some more things have come out about Planned Parenthood. And
this is from people inside Planned Parenthood.
Yeah. The first insider that we're going to refer to is Lena Wynn, who was the previous Planned Parenthood president.
For a really short period of time.
Yeah, for a very short period of time. She came in between Cecile Richards and the new one, which is Alexis McGill Johnson. And she has just written a book called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. And before we get started on this, I want to clarify here that some of these articles may make you think that Lena Wynn is somewhere in the middle ground on the abortion issue.
Yeah,
she's not.
No.
Whenever she says public health or healthcare, if you talk to pro-choicers enough and you understand the nuance of their language,
right.
It's very clear that abortion is in there. They consider abortion healthcare.
Right.
She even defends abortion and Roe versus Wade. She is not
in any way
middle ground.
People understand. She is a raging baby killer. So all the stuff that we're hearing needs to be tempered with that realization. She is not somebody, and I've even heard a pro-lifer say, well, she at least seems like somebody we could reason with and have a rational. No, you can't. This is a raging baby killer. She's just not as raging as, say, Cecile Richards was before her, or this new woman.
Who Alexis McGill Johnson, yeah.
Is now.
But, yeah.
But she's a baby killer, make no mistake about it.
But in her book, she talked about how one of her first appearances was on ABC's The View. And so during that interview, she tried not to mention abortion directly. She talked about health care, reproductive health care, and she did say the word abortion. It's not like the word abortion didn't pop mm-hmm. up, but it wasn't emphasized. And she says the reason why she was tempering it was that many people in the pro-choice or the pro-abortion side try to paint abortion as empowering and positive, mm-hmm. and for some women, it's right. an easy decision. And she said, and this is what she says, that that was not her experience, that most women that she talked to, it was not an easy decision.
Yep.
And again, she tried to kind of temper it because she wanted to promote health care and all this kind of stuff. Now, the hosts of The View certainly were not unwilling to throw that into the discussion. But she thought she did pretty good. She tried to play kind of a middle ground attitude on that. And she says that the audience was pretty pleased with her responses, but Planned Parenthood was not. Less than an hour after she got off the show, messages started rolling in on her phone, and she says that they caught her off guard. A board member texted her saying, make sure you talk about abortion. Other people texted saying that back in the office, there was a lot of worried chatter. Did I leave out abortion on purpose, they wondered? Was this a signal that I didn't want to defend access to abortion?
Yeah.
She said, until that moment, I thought that the overriding reason Planned Parenthood was equated with abortion instead of its other health care services was anti-choice opposition. I was taken aback to see that it wasn't just the anti-choice side that wanted to brand Planned Parenthood with abortion. I would have some version of this conversation at least once every day with people on the board or the national office staff. And so this continued to be a theme during her short time as president mm-hmm. at Planned Parenthood. Eventually, Planned Parenthood's board was telling her, change your message, promote abortion, or you're going to have to go.
And she had to go.
And what they did was a classic shady organization move. They had a secret board meeting, yep. voted her out, and she found out that she was fired because everybody else on the internet found out.
Right, yeah. Same time.
Ugh. And one of the things I think is interesting that I wanted to mention here is that she was warned, if we don't talk about abortion openly, loudly, and proudly as a positive moral good, then we are further stigmatizing it. Now, interestingly enough, Planned Parenthood's new president, Alexis McGill Johnson, served on Planned Parenthood's board for nearly a decade and stated in an interview with the Washington Post not long after she was in the new position. So I think when we say it's a small part of what we do, what we're really doing is actually stigmatizing it. Like, it's not really a big deal that Planned Parenthood does this. We are a proud abortion provider. Now, a number of these quotes, we are proud of providing abortions. We don't need to sanitize it. We don't need to stigmatize it. It kind of seems like Alexis McGill Johnson was one of those board members that was constantly harping on
it. And now she's got to sing the party line.
Yeah, and right. now she's got her job.
Right.
After now, this secret board meeting.
Before we go on, let's make a point here I think is very important.
Yeah.
On one hand, they're saying this is not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Right. This Wynn person is wrong for making it sound like women are traumatized by this decision or stigmatized by it or whatever it might. It's not a big deal. And we're just a proud abortion provider. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell you how many times I have been told in debates with the pro-aborts, and this is one of their standard arguments. This is one of the toughest decisions a woman will ever have to make. And you have no right to be involved in it. Now, wait a minute.
Why is it tough?
Why is it a tough decision? If you're not killing a baby and it's no big deal mm-hmm. and it empowers women, and you notice they've gotten away from the Bill Clinton line, safe, legal, and rare.
Yeah.
They dropped the rare.
Funny that you mention it, because the interesting thing is one of the deals Lena Wynn talked about in her book was she brought in this pro-choice speaker to talk who's mentioned safe, legal, and rare, and Planned Parenthood board went nuts.
Right.
Because of the rare part.
Rare part, because we in the pro-life movement started holding our feet to the fire and yeah. saying, wait a minute. If it's not murder, you're mm-hmm. not taking the life of a child, and it's a constitutional right,
yeah.
and it empowers women, why should it be rare?
Mm-hmm.
during their childbearing years. They should be having 8 or 10 abortions like was going on in Russia mm-hmm. or in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. So they've always tried this thing of saying, oh, it's the toughest decision a woman will ever have to make, and women agonize over it, and no woman has an abortion lightly, when it suits them to make that argument. But then all of a sudden now, when this argument's blowing up in their face, oh, it's no big deal. It's almost like, you know, having your fingernails cut or something, going to the manicurist or whatever. They want you to think it's no more impactful than that.
Yeah.
These people are pathological liars. But this is an example of the rhetorical gymnastics they have to go through
yeah.
to justify abortion. They cannot do it, and they know they can't.
Well, and this deal of stressing abortion, and it has nothing to do about stigmatizing abortion. Abortion is their deal. That's what they do.
That's where the money is.
When it comes down to it, when it comes down to a choice between providing abortions versus providing actual health care, they will choose sacrificing everything else
right.
for abortion.
Yep.
And if you don't think that abortion is not Planned Parenthood's priority, in the 2019-2020 annual report for Planned Parenthood, that just was released in February very quietly, they reported 354,871 abortions during the 2018-2019 year, the highest number ever recorded, and an increase of 2.7% from the previous report. In that same year, abortions made up 96.4% of Planned Parenthood's pregnancy resolution services, if that's what you want to call it, while prenatal services accounted for 2.3%. Miscarriage care, 0.6%. Adoption referrals, 0.7%. Over the last 10 years, total cancer screenings and prevention services have dropped by 63%, including declines of more than 64% for breast exams and 65% for pap smears. Abortion is their bread and butter. Everything else shows that abortions are in, everything is out.
Yep.
And anytime you question them, they talk about health care for poor women. And besides the fact that it's insulting that they expect poor women to get their health care from abortionists, right. I mean, that's back alley stuff. Their big go-to is, oh, what about pap smears and breast exams? Well, apparently, they're not doing very money if they're dropping 64%.
And besides, it's already been shown. We proved it right here in Texas.
Yeah.
When you take money away from Planned Parenthood and give that health care money to legitimate clinics, women do not suffer from that. You know, they would have you believe that when we go down here and walk around the square on Denton, we're mm-hmm. having to step over the dead bodies of women who are killed because Planned Parenthood was defunded here in Texas. And nothing could be further from the truth than that. Women get better health care. And I think it's obscene mm-hmm. that they suggest that poor people, overwhelmingly minority people,
yeah.
they get their health care from abortionists. The rest of us go to legitimate doctors. And if you don't think that's true, and I've challenged them on this for years, mm-hmm. I've never had one of them take me up on it. Find me a pro-abort state legislator, a pro-abort governor, a pro-abort member of Congress, a member of the House, member of the Senate. Find me one of these people who gets their health care or sends their family to Planned Parenthood.
They don't.
They don't.
Besides the fact it's that they don't want to be there.
Right.
They don't actually offer that many services. If you're going to go someplace to get health care, you want to go to someplace that will actually provide health care.
Right. Yeah. And it's an obscenity the way they sit here and try to say that we're a health care provider. Mm-hmm. First off, abortion is not health care.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear. If abortion was health care, that would have to mean that women are healthier after they have one than before they have one. And nobody can make that argument. Nobody can argue that.
Especially when there are links to abortion and breast cancer.
Well, there's all kinds of links to all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I challenge one of these people to call me and tell me, and if you're a pro-abort listener to this, and we know a lot of pro-aborts do, call me and tell me what medical condition affecting pregnant women is cured by killing the baby. Tell me one of them. Tell me one condition that's cured by killing the baby. And the answer is, it's a nice round number, zero. There are no health conditions that affect pregnant women that are cured by killing the baby. Abortion is not health care.
Yeah.
It's not health care any more than boob jobs are health care. We would not call them health care just because they're done in a clinical environment and yeah. maybe done by a board-certified plastic surgeon. We don't.
Who's got some nice little letters behind their name.
Right. That doesn't make that health care.
Yeah.
Same thing here. It's not healthcare. Women are not healthier after they have one than they are before they have one. You can argue how much unhealthier they are. Mm-hmm. They might say, well, they're not unhealthier either. But that's not the point. If abortion was healthcare, they'd have to be healthier afterwards than before, and they're not. Yeah. There's no way to make that argument.
Well, speaking of relegating healthcare to an abortionist, the next article we have is kind of interesting. The title reads, Ex-Planned Parenthood director says that abortion giant seduces immigrants with threat of deportation. Yep. Over the weekend, Myra Rodriguez spoke at a Democrats for Life of America's annual conference in Columbus, Ohio. Now, she worked with Planned Parenthood for over a decade and a half, and she at one point oversaw three clinics in Arizona.
So she's on the inside.
Yeah, she was on the inside. She says that she was hired to attract the undocumented immigrant community.
Which she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said that Planned Parenthood hired her knowing she was undocumented.
Knowing she was illegal, so they hired her anyway.
Yep. And she said, Planned Parenthood officials tell immigrants that they're welcome there. We won't deport you. We won't call ICE on you. But if you carry your baby and you go to the hospital and you live, for example, in an Arizona or Ohio or other states where they have very strict anti-undocumented people laws, you may get deported. So when you have that, what do women think? Oh, I cannot have a child because I might get deported and I could be separated from my other three kids. They use the threat of deportation
To sell
people abortions.
Right. Yep. This goes right along with some revelations that we saw a year or so ago where these Planned Parenthood people are coming out and saying that they saw overt, hardcore racism inside Planned Parenthood, which is exactly what the pro-life movement has been saying, which is exactly what we proved with our documentary, Maafa 21.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe so, go to maafa21.com and you can watch it for free, or go to lifedynamics.com. Abortion was legalized as an instrument of eugenics and racism.
Yeah.
And now you have these employees coming out saying, we saw overt racism.
Well, and getting back to this deal on the pressuring women by using their undocumented status to get them to have abortions, I mean, if your goal is abortions to make money and you're clearly okay with killing the unborn, then pressuring women and convincing them that they're going to get deported if they have their baby, that's no big deal. That's small potatoes compared to everything else.
Certainly. And they see that. For them, they don't recognize that, hey, you know, people hear this, they may have a different view of it than we do because they live in this unreal environment. Once you cross that Rubicon, once you get into that situation where you're butchering babies for money every day, then your whole perspective is distorted. Everything that you do is distorted.
And I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Okay,
but
I will.
You won't hesitate.
I've been known to do that.
I think I remember you telling me at one point that you've noticed how the abortion industry treats women who are not English speakers, who are from other countries, especially if their immigration status is questionable. They treat them very differently.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. They understand that these women are between the rock and a hard spot very often. And I wish I'd known we were going to go down this trail, I would have looked it up. But we have in line five a story about years ago, there was a, I think she was 15 years old, if I remember correctly, having an abortion at a California abortion clinic. And she was undocumented, illegal alien from Mexico.
Yeah.
They killed her.
Yeah.
To keep that from getting out, they were going to take her and bury her out in the desert. They got caught.
Because the girl was in the trunk of her car, of the abortionist's car.
They were putting her in the trunk of the abortionist's car. And whoever had brought her there to the clinic was starting to get concerned because she hadn't heard from this girl for a long time. And so she walked out into the parking lot and she's thinking about whether she should call somebody. And she looks behind the clinic and there they are putting her body in the trunk of a car. And they got caught and the abortionist went to trial. And they admitted they were going to take her out and bury her in the desert. Now, here's my argument here. And I'm sure that when you were a kid and you got caught doing something new, you always said, I guarantee you, I'd ask your mother this. She says, how often do you do this? Well, this is the first time I've ever
done it. She didn't ask me that because she knew better.
Every kid does that. And every parent knows the chances that you get caught doing something the first time you do it are almost zero. So this is something you've done before.
Yeah.
Let's apply that scenario to this situation in California.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me that they're putting this Hispanic girl They've killed her. Mm-hmm. They're putting her in the trunk of a car. They're going to take her out and bury her on the desert somewhere. You're not going to tell me they got caught the first time they ever did this. There's no way on God's green earth that that could possibly be true. That doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah.
The question is, how common is this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think about it for a minute. If they had gotten away with it, if they had gotten out of the parking lot with her in the trunk of the car, the chances of them getting caught are almost zero. I mean, nobody knows who this girl is. Mm-hmm. They don't know where she is. The other people that she's around are probably illegal. They're not going to go anywhere and say anything. They may think she just went back to Mexico.
Well,
they don't know.
That doesn't have to be just girls who were killed in their abortions. Just some of the other stuff that happens in the clinics. They know that these women are not going to go report them to the authorities if they do something because they're undocumented. They can't.
They can't afford to. So if they rape them, which we know is relatively common in abortion clinics for girls to get raped.
Or butcher them somehow or do something.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever they do, the perfect victims are the ones who are illegal. And so naturally, you're going to recruit those more often.
Yeah.
So this idea that you're going to go in there and say, look, if you have your baby at a hospital, they're probably going to call ICE or they're probably going to call the authorities and you're probably going to be deported. If you have an abortion, we promise we won't say anything to anybody. And it's basically what they say
to the pedophiles,
to the pedophiles,
young girls,
to the young girls that come in there. We know right now from all the studies that have been done, 60 to 80% of all minor children in this country who get pregnant, minor girls who get pregnant, 60 to 80% are impregnated by adults, not by other children.
Yeah.
Planned Parenthood knows that. They've admitted that they know that.
We have tapes from our investigation on our website, childpredators.com, where you have clinic workers talking to what they believe is a 13-year-old girl who is potentially pregnant by a 22-year-old man.
Right.
And call after call, these clinic workers are agreeing not to tell the authorities. They are willing to conceal what is statutory rape of a minor girl.
And what's just as important is how often this girl would start telling the story and they'd interrupt her and say, oh yeah, we hear this all the time. Here's how we handle this.
This one call, this woman said, stop right there. I don't want to know anything else because if you do, I have to call the police. She warns the young girl that not only is this illegal, but if she tells her anymore, she will have to call the police.
Right.
In our follow-up report that we did where we document actual cases of this, one case I remember very vividly where this girl is in there. She tells the clinic workers she does not want to have the abortion. She's being forced to be there. They ignore her. They say nothing and send her on her way home.
We had one in Pennsylvania where the girl's stepfather had taken her for an abortion and would not leave her alone during the counseling.
Yeah.
And they said they recognized that she was very nervous. Mm-hmm. He had her back there just a couple of months later for the same thing a second time. This time he went to the bathroom and she told the counselor, my stepfather's raping me and I don't want to have this abortion. They did it anyway. And this is the kind of people that you're dealing with when you're dealing with people who work in abortion clinics. That's what you get. You don't get the cream of the crop. But the point here is this situation with them telling these women, if you have your baby, if you give birth to your baby, you may wind up getting deported, but we won't say anything. They're trying to isolate them from the very people who are there to protect them, just like they isolate these pedophile victims from the law that's there to protect them. It's the exact same situation.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because one of the other things she talked about was how her training at Planned Parenthood taught her how to convince teen girls to get abortions.
Yep.
And she says they train you to tell them and portray the horrible life you will have if you have this child. She says, what are you going to do? Your mom's going to kick you out. The school's going to kick you out. You're not going to finish your schooling. Your boyfriend's going to leave you. Your parents are not going to be with you. They're going to be tired of babysitting for you, and you're going to have to drop out of school. She says that after hearing that pessimistic outlook for their future, many girls see abortion as their only logical option. But she says if that doesn't work, then they give them the guilt trip that your child deserves a good life you cannot give them right now.
Right.
So out of love for your child, you should kill them.
Let's kill them. Yeah, let's kill them for their own good.
Isolating teen girls from their parents.
Right, yeah. You know, a classic example of another area where this happens is how husbands that are abusive, physically abusive to their wives, will isolate them from their support system, from their families, from their friends, from their coworkers, isolate them over here on the sidelines.
So they can control them.
So there's
no intervening force.
There is absolutely no difference
between
that guy and these people right here.
Exactly.
Anyway, we're out of time.
Yep. If you like the podcast, make sure that you get your friends to listen. Share this episode with your friends. There's a lot of good information in here that needs to get out. Also, be sure to follow the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. We're on a whole bunch of different ones, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, the list goes on. And if you have a moment, I encourage you to leave a rating or a review of our podcast. There's going to be a button in our podcast description on these platforms, as well as on the episode page on our website. You click that button, it will take you over to places where you can leave a review.
Absolutely.
And it helps other people discover our podcast. So right. We encourage you to go ahead and do that.
Right. Listen, that's all the time we have until next Thursday. Remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
We're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.